Well, we all learn something. I would, you know, we'd get into argument about this or that. So we'd look and say, get the book out, you know. But I had all kinds of books. I had baseball books and a lot of other books, too, that were record books. The baseball put one out that was just about baseball, but the almanac had a little bit of everything in it. So, and then in those days, we had pinball machines. And they were nickel machines, and we had people that played those like mad. And then when later on, we applied for a Keno license, like Kid Mexico had. We had the license, but they wouldn't let us open up. Somebody else had one in town, too, but we could, Kid Mexico, they kept putting us off, so I still have the old license at home someplace. I thought it might be in this book, so I just kept just a little bit of stuff from Curly's, not very much.
Where did most of your revenue come from? Was it from selling beer, or?
We've had whiskey, beer, and wine, and then we always served food there. And then we cashed a lot of checks. And in the old days, we never charged for cashing checks. If there was change on your check, like it was 93 cents or 14 cents, we kept the change. Mm-hmm. And the people never said anything. And that's, we started that years and years ago.
Yeah.
So that was just, and we just built the business up from the small place to the one that I sold over about 7 years ago. But it used to be full all day long. It was the watering hole of Signal Hill.
And was it mostly working people came
in? Well, after in 69, when we built this place, the dining room was separate than the bar site, and so that is when we got a super mixture. The blue collar workers or the men would be in the bar site, and then we got people from Douglas. We got from every phase of life, from the poor boy to the rich guy, you know, would come in there. Parnelli Jones used to come in there. Jacques Lousteau has been in, others. Rhoda Barrett was in a few times.
Mostly your regulars,
were
people
who
worked around there?
Mm-hmm. Well, then a lot of people would bring customers in, too. We got a lot of pilots from Continental. We got something, TWA, that lived in Inglewood that would come down and, because they knew a lot of people at the airport, so I got a lot of everyday people that own small businesses. And so it was just a melting pot, you know, for everything. Had very wealthy business people come in. And I when we started in 69, then I encouraged. I never took MasterCard or anything like that. But I would take, if they wanted to have charge accounts for lunch or whatever, the business people, I had a lot of people that, and that helped business too, because they could keep a record for their income tax purpose, you know. So it was, everything just kind of fit, and I was more mild-mannered, like my mother, and so people kind of, they enjoyed coming in there because I learned early in life that if you could remember a person's name, they liked that recognition. And there were certain people that I used to say Mr. and Mrs. to. And some people that I would just call them by their first name, you know. Because I don't know, I was just, I kind of honored certain accomplishments by people, you know. Now, like Dean Eastman, I started Eastman, he came in. I never could call him Dean for some reason. And he'd say, my name's Dean. I'd say, okay, Mr. Eastman. But it just, some people, I don't know if you have that association or not, you just, some people just seem like they need that extra title or something. And other people, like, that were older, I could just call them Roy or Nell or whatever, you know. So it was, and they enjoyed that.
Tell me about
him. Oh, he was a character. At Christmas time, he used to go around. He had a limo. He'd have his tuxedo, his big black coat on. He'd give Christmas presents, and he was quite a showman, you know. Kid Faulkner was his real name, because he was a fighter. But I didn't know that much about him, but I just, when I was growing up, he had the Keno on Orange Avenue. And he was a character. Well, my dad talked to him quite a bit about, because he wanted Keno also. And then we applied and got the license. That was before I was old enough to go to work there. And, but it, then they shut him down then eventually. But there was an element to try to get card games in Signal Hill, too, at one time, through Bob Crow, the councilman for Long Beach. Did you know Bob or not? You heard of him?
I know him by reputation.
He had Mr. C's here.
Yeah.
So it was, I don't know if it was put on the ballot or not, or if they had to, but it was denied by the council years ago, so. But it was just Signal Hill was, as far as on the north side of the hill, there was nothing, you know, oil wells. And then on the south side, it was nothing but oil wells. So there was a few places that you could put stuff there. And the corner where we're at was, and the one next door were available. But and then before Home Bank bought from Mrs. Davis, that's who owned that the property where Home Bank is, and where Audrey Davis, her family left her the land where Curly's is and where Home Bank is, and she lived there until Home Bank bought that property, she and her mother. But okay, you just can't believe what's taking place in Signal Hill, you know. It's just the condos came in, but it's kind of overdone, and it just sat there from 19, well, the freeway came through, took some businesses out, and some of them didn't, they were old timers in the oil business, and they just hung it up. But now the new greed is developing a lot of stuff. But it's slowed down again for the environmentalists. Because every day you have to come up and you have to conform to new rules and regulations. So the right hand don't know what the left hand's doing. And some of that property was used badly. And others aren't. It's not so bad, you know. Now the car mall, I guess they got that all straightened out. And it's going to fly, hopefully.
What do you think we're going to have?
Just another source of revenue. Yeah,
because it sort of doesn't sound like the kind of game that they pay them for it.
Oh, yeah. Well, I don't know. You just, the Keno is just, it was just, we had the pinball machines. We had two pinball machines.
Yeah. How did
you get
them? Did
you rent them? They were our machines, and we had to, it was kind of like a 50-50 proposition, or 40-60, I forget. The Thompson brothers, they were in the jukebox business, and in those days, shuffleboard was big. So we had, but we bought our own shuffleboards. In that one room, we had a pool hall on one side and the original Curly's, and then we had three shuffleboards. And they in those days, because it only cost you a dime a person to play, but a shuffleboard would pay for itself in nothing flat because it was, they were busy. And then the bars had, they would have shuffleboard tournaments. 1 week you'd go play one person in one bar, and then they'd come back and play, and then you'd go to, there was about 6 or 8 bars that we would frequent. We had tournaments. I didn't play, my mother and dad did. But. And so it was just good entertainment, and they got to meet their competitors, and then that way the customers moved around, you know, and it helped business. But it, the Keno was just a source of more revenue.
What other bars were around that you played
at? Oh, I see the Hillside and the Alamo.
And the
Alamo was at 17th and Alameda. The building is still there. Bill Clark owned it for years and years, and I think he sold it. The Old States was over on Pacific. Smitty's a little bar over on Pacific also. There, I can't think of all. Oops, covering up. I can't think because I didn't play I only played at the Curly's. I played.
But were these bars kind of attractive to
think about? Oh, yeah. They were just everyday people, you know. And they'd have a little social event, you know. That was their, to meet their competitors and to drum up business. And it was successful. But the Keno was just like anything else, like bingo. Now, you don't realize that the people that have these bingo parlors, they make a lot of money. And so it was just something that my dad wanted to increase, and he never did get it, but I don't know why we didn't. But then later, they called him Pappy Hires. He ended up the chief of police at Sigma Hill before Denham took over. And so he said that the pinball machines were a public nuisance to the police department. But we never had no calls, no nothing, you know. So it was just, that's how they got rid of the pinball machines.
Like a unilateral decision?
Mm-hmm.
And he got rid of all of them and all of them?
Yeah, just like that, just one move. Because that was the only way they could get rid of them, was that decision, I guess, you know. And he made the decision.
And you don't know what
motivated him to do this? No. Because he was in business right next door to us.
did he have pinball machines that were...
Mm-mm, no. He had a welding shop, which would have been on the other side, north of Home Bank, was his little business. He owned a piece of property there. No, but he just was... I don't know if somebody else put a bug in his ear. I think that he took the fall for it, but I don't know. You'll never know whose idea it was. And then, in Signal Hill, you'll see they got a little oil derrick as you walk into Signal Hill.
Yeah.
My mother's name is on that for the first fiesta they had years ago. I was always angry because she was the only woman there, and they just put L Turner instead of Lillian. See, so it was. I thought that since everybody else were men that were on the committee, you know, that they said, well, it was too long. But I said, well, look at some of the other names on there. But we did, for the first 3 or 4 of the fiestas we had there, it was quite a deal. They had a jail on wheels, The Pappy hires me.
Oh,
the building
shop.
Uh-huh. It's between he and George Ritchie. And George Ritchie's son is George Murchison. You know George Murchison?
I do.
He used to be with the Harbor Bank, and he's the one that got ousted. And he's a CPA in Dublin, so. But they built this jail, and they would pull it around. And if you didn't have a beard, or I don't know what they charged you for, but it said smooth puss on it. It cost you $5 or $10 for this button. But if you didn't have that button on, they'd lock you up in this jail until you bought another button. And if you didn't buy the button, then we had a tank next to our place, like a doughboy pool.
Mm-hmm.
They threw you in that. Suit and all, you know. So it was, but everybody took it in good strides, you know. And so they, that's when they still continue that fiesta there. But I forget what year the first one.
Well, what else did they do during the fiesta?
Oh, it lasted for 2 or 3 weeks. But then they had a little parade. They had games for kids. The very first one, like a little soapbox. And they had them for the small kids. Let's see, is that 25th Hill Street, right above the city hall? But it was a little steeper in those days, and that's where they would have the little soapbox for the real small kids. For the big ones, they would have it. They had I forget where they had the other hill, but they would go fast. But for the little kids, and they had all kinds of little carnival games for them, you know. So, but it's changed now. I think all they have now is the food, and they have a few booths still, and then they always have a western band. But the first one, they had a parade and everything. So.
So what other kinds of civic activities were your mom and dad involved in besides not getting
the other things? No, nothing. They, because the chamber wasn't very big then in those days, but the Chamber of Commerce has grown quite a bit, Signal Hill. But there was really, actually, they go to the council meetings and stuff like that, to find out what was going on. But it was nothing, their social life was all with their friends, you know. My folks used to have barbecues in the backyard. We had a big barbecue we had that was just unreal. My folks loved to entertain. And then the recipe for our stew and chili came from my mother and my aunt worked for us. So between the two of them, that was the backbone of our business. That's how we grew, because we had, in the wintertime, the stew and the chili side were just a big item to draw people in. And then we started serving lunches and getting more involved in the food, you know. But we couldn't keep enough stew or chili.
What other kinds of businesses were you involved in?
I was in the wrecking business. I was in Admore, which is in Stanton, at Beach. I was in that with Max Stone, Red Cherry Auto Wrecking. Then I was in Alco Auto Wrecking, which is in Alameda, with a partner of Max's, was named Paul Sowers. He used to own the Cherry 101 garage at the Pacific Coast Highway in Cherry, and his brother bought it from him. So he, I was in Admore for about 4 years, and then I was at Alco for not quite 6 years, I guess. We lost our lease over there. They wouldn't renew our lease.
Did you actually work in these places, or were you just in
there? I was an investor in Admore at Alco. I worked 2, 3, 4 days a week, whatever I wanted to do. And then the last year I worked every day because a partner took off. So.
How did you manage to run Curly's?
I'd already sold Curly's. When I had invested in the first wrecking yard 2 years before I sold Curly's. And it was a good investment. But Alco wasn't a good investment. So we lost our partner, got first count, so he went to Tennessee with all of our money, unfortunately. Then my other venture was Signal Savings, which I got into it by accident. It's because Papadakis was on the council, George, and so they thought it was a conflict of interest. But they had asked me to be on the board originally because I knew a lot of people, and they thought I could bring a lot of stockholders in. So I said, they said, well, the board's full. And I said, okay, that's fine. Then Westby backed up, Bill Westby, because he had just opened up the liquor store, and he needed time for that. And so then I got in with George, and then that's when I was on the board, the original board. And I never resigned. I hung in there through the spin of it. And
how did it start?
That was, I don't know who, I don't know if, I think basically it was started through, from what I gather, it was through Papadakis and Westy and Marv, I think. Now, they were just talking one day about this, and then all of a sudden it just started being a reality, you know. They started having meetings and...
And they weren't,
and he said there was only one bank. Home Bank was there when we started this, and then First Interstate then bought from Buzz McCallum that property on the corner, and they put that in. And it was unfortunately that we got hooked up with a guy that sold us a bunch of bad loans, and one of our persons, that was an ex-board member, was a CPA. He okayed these loans, and they were incomplete. So, and that put us in the hole, and then the feds closed us down. So.
Who else was on the board?
The original board was, we had two women, Nancy Freeze and Muriel Paxton. Nancy Freeze is John Phillips' oil tool company. And Mrs. Paxton, her husband started Allied Oil Well Service, and he died. She just passed away just this past month. Now, on the original board, we had Ron Stiles, who was a CPA here in town. We had Don Anderson, that owned Advanced Plumbing and Engineering on Walnut. The two Haneys, myself, and then we had a real estate guy, Bob, he was one of the first ones to resign, and then we had the attorney, Nathan Tite. I believe I covered all of them. But I can't think of, they live in Huntington Harbor, he and his wife are investors in real estate, and I think their son is with them also. But the year before we went, we had the Bob Herrera's company had sold us these bad loans, and we had paid them off. We had made almost $1 million, so we really thought we were going going to go because the one guy, Ron Stiles, the CPA, he knew the fellow that started down in savings. And so he says, this signal is going to work. He says, you know, that I know it's going to work. So I bought my stock, and then we came out with preferred stock. So I bought some more stock because Ron says, our investment, you're going to get back probably a minimum of 5-to-1 price. I was figuring, I said, well, if it goes to 5-to-1, I'll let somebody have put near all my stock, at least half of it, you know. And so I was so enthused. And I'm sure glad a lot of my friends didn't buy, because I had a few, but they didn't buy, you know, $3,000 or $4,000 or $5,000 worth. It didn't hurt them, you know. But I still can't believe to this day that we paid the guy for the loan. But he'd done this to another.
Yeah, I know
that he paid. And what is kind of sad about it, the FBI, they were very neglect about going after him. So finally they did. They're going to prosecute the guy. But he's in business again already in Huntington Beach. This is the third time he's ripped people off. And I was going to write the president a letter because he promised in his speech, I will make sure that the people involved in the savings and loans will go to prison. So I think, man, I better sit down and write him a letter, see if he can get the rare in jail. But then we had a good workout plan, which Marv has probably maybe told you, but the state okayed it, but the feds, this branch here, was afraid to let you do anything. They said, we have to get the okay from Washington, D.C. That's why the failure was, is because I don't think they communicated amongst themselves. They, because most of those people that worked for the banking institution are book people. They've never had a job. So they don't know if a business, if you go broke, if you can make it back again, you know. So I think we really got the short end of the stick. And now Walsh has resigned. But what good does that do us? So we all bit the bullet. I go by and see Mark every once in a while at Pat to see if they've prosecuted Bob Herrera. But he says, well, they're still on the trail. They've drawn up all the paperwork for it to go to court, you know, but the courts are so backlogged anyway now. I don't know. We're going to have to change, get more judges to do something. They prolong all this stuff. They get delays. And just when I was in business, I used to prosecute people for bad checks and stuff. Never received restitution in any of the cases. Never. And got judgment against the people, but they wouldn't pay. Talked to their probation officer. He says, well, you just can't pay now. I says, why do I waste my time going to court, you know? So finally I just quit, you know. I was wasting my time and their time. The only one I did collect, I sued a doctor over that he stopped payment on a check, and he lied while he stopped payment. And I took him to small claims court, and he changed his bank account, and I knew a person that knew him that didn't like him. And so through my attorney and him, they put an attachment on his check, and I got my $500.
Good.
That's the only one I collected, but the rest of them were just, I got a whiskey case full of bad checks.